What's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. President Obama embarks on the final day of his historic three-day visit to Cuba by addressing the Cuban people. He's expected to speak about the two nations' complicated past, the course to normalization, and his vision for the future. Monday, he and his Cuban counterpart Raul Castro held what Mr. Obama called frank and candid talks, then met with the press. Mr. Obama acknowledged the two sides continue to have serious differences on democracy and human rights.
I said consistently, after more than five very difficult decades, the relationship between our governments will not be transformed overnight. We continue, as President Castro indicated, to have some very serious differences, including on democracy and human rights.
After being questioned about political prisoners, Mr. Castro reacted angrily. He demanded to be shown a list of such detainees. Cuba's position is it holds no such political prisoners. Mr. Castro also welcomed the easing of trade and travel restrictions, but stressed the need for U.S. action to lift the more than five-decade-long trade embargo. The International Criminal Court has found former Congolese Vice President Jean-Pierre Bemba guilty on five counts of war crimes and crimes against humanity. A three-judge panel at The Hague ruled unanimously he was criminally responsible for acts of murder, rape, and pillage carried out by his militia in Central African Republic a decade ago. Judge Sylvia Steiner, Brazil, said evidence clearly showed the MLC fighters deliberately targeted civilians.
The chairman concluded that the civilian population was the primary as opposed to incidental target of the attack.
She said Bemba has effective control of his movement for the liberation of Congo and knew his forces were about to commit atrocities. Bemba had pleaded not guilty to the charges. This is VOA News. The U.S. Defense Department Monday acknowledged for the first time the presence of a U.S. Marine fire base in northern Iraq that provides force protection for coalition forces, including U.S. advisors fighting Islamic State. They're at a base near Makmur. The revelation came during news that an IS attack on the base killed one Marine and wounded several others. Colonel Steve Warren is a Pentagon spokesman.
I'd like to start off on a somber note by offering our condolences to the family, friends, fellow Marines of Staff Sergeant Lewis F. Cardin of Temecula, California, who was tragically killed on March 19th.
Firebase Bell is the first independent U.S. base of its kind in Iraq since the return of U.S. military personnel to Iraq in 2014. They're helping train Iraqi forces for a hoped-for offensive to retake the IS stronghold of Mosul. Both Republican and Democratic U.S. presidential candidates addressed the largest pro-Israel advocacy group, AIPAC, in Washington Monday. Republican New York businessman Donald Trump praised Israel as the only democracy in the Middle East and slammed the Iran nuclear agreement.
I have been in business a long time. I know deal making. And let me tell you, this deal is catastrophic for America, for Israel, and for the whole of the Middle East.
Trump also vowed to veto any UN measure that would impose its will on Israel and said he'd move the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem. Earlier, Democratic presidential hopeful Hillary Clinton said America cannot be neutral.
When it comes to Israel's security or survival, we can't be neutral. When rockets rain down on residential neighborhoods, when civilians are stabbed in the street, when suicide bombers target the innocent.
Clinton promised if elected, she would be a staunch advocate for the Jewish state. Gunmen launched an attack late Monday at a hotel being used as headquarters for the European Union military force in Mali's capital, Bamako. Guards killed one of the four attackers. There was no immediate claim of responsibility for the assault, which comes about 4 months after militants from Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb attacked a Bamako hotel, killing 20. The Algerian Defense Ministry says soldiers killed six suspected terrorists in the country's southeast near Tunisia's border. A cache of assault rifles, pistols, and ammunition was recovered. Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb claimed a rocket attack Friday in a southern Algerian gas plant. Police in Zambia Monday arrested opposition leader Eric Chanda for criticizing President Edgar Lungu for using public funds while on holiday. Chanda, leader of the Fourth Revolution Party, defamation of the president can result in a five-year prison term. Opposition politician Jeffrey Mwamba of the United Party for National Development was arrested twice earlier this month, charged with training a private militia and threatening the president. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, March 22nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The ICC finds Congo rebel leader Jean-Pierre Bemba guilty for war crimes.
In light of the evidence analyzed as a whole, the chamber found beyond reasonable doubt that Mr. Bemba is criminally responsible for the crimes against humanity of murder and rape committed in the territory of the Central African Republic.
That's Judge Sylvia Steiner of the ICC. The pro-government Yes camp in Sunday's Senegal controversial constitutional referendum is claiming some victory ahead of final results. And South Sudan's government says it will stop paying the hotel bills of about 600 rebel advance team members in Juba.
The government has been paying for them for the last 2 months, and that was not an ending thing. That's why the government said that they can no longer continue taking up the responsibility of Africa, and General Ku had promised to pay for them.
Barnaba Moral Benjamin, South Sudan's foreign minister, a survey by Afrobarometer says a majority of Africans lack access to clean drinking water and sanitation. And we'll have a wrap-up of President Barack Obama's first full day in Cuba. Those stories plus Marco Oban's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The International Criminal Court, the ICC, has found former Congolese vice president and rebel leader Jean-Pierre Bemba guilty of war crimes and crimes against humanity during operations in the Central African Republic. Bemba is the first ICC defendant to be convicted of rape as a war crime and crime against humanity. Joe Craig has more from Nairobi, Kenya.
Marking the final chapter of a trial ongoing since November 2010, the International Criminal Court issued a guilty verdict Monday against former Congolese vice president and rebel leader Jean-Pierre Bemba Gombo.
In light of the evidence analyzed as a whole, the chamber found beyond reasonable doubt that Mr. Bemba is criminally responsible under Article 28A for the crimes against humanity of murder and rape and the war crimes of murder, rape, and pillaging committed in the territory of the Central African Republic by the MLC forces in the course of 2002-2003 operations.
Bemba is the most senior political leader to face judgment at the ICC and the first convicted of rape as a war crime and crime against humanity. Mariana Lapena is a legal officer with the Open Society Justice Initiative.
It's the second case that looks over sexual violence, but it's the first conviction. So in a way, it's becoming real.
Bemba was found guilty for failing to control his troops. Senior researcher Aaron Mata at the Hague Institute for Global Justice says the verdict is significant.
It's kind of historical in that sense because he's the first commander being tried and found guilty of command responsibility, particularly from the fact that he failed to take action in order to stop the crimes from being committed.
ICC prosecutor Fetu Bensouda responded Monday that those in command or authority in control positions have legal obligations over troops even when they are sent to a foreign country. Lapena says she hopes the verdict will deter other would-be offenders.
I think it's a very important message to commanders in different capacities that may be overseeing troops that are committing crimes, that they could be held accountable for the crimes committed by their troops if they don't act appropriately to prevent the crimes or repress the crimes.
Bemba now waits to be sentenced after spending almost 8 years in detention. He and four associates face a second ICC trial in which they are accused of witness tampering in relation to his war crimes trial. 53-year-old Bemba is a former rebel leader in the north of the Democratic Republic of Congo. He sent troops from his Movement for the Liberation of Congo into the Central African Republic in October 2002 to help put down an attempted coup by Francois Bozizé against then-president and rival Ange-Félix Patassé. Bozizé took control of the Central African Republic before he was ousted in 2013. Following his involvement in the CAR, Bemba took a position as one of four vice presidents in DRC President Joseph Kabila's transitional government. After losing a presidential bid in 2006 to Kabila, Bemba fled in 2007 to Europe, where he was arrested in 2008. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
South Sudan's government says beginning the end of this week, it will stop paying the hotel bills for about 600 rebel advance team members who have been living in Juba since last December to work out the modalities for the implementation of last year's August peace agreement. The advance team has also been preparing for the coming to Juba of rebel leader Dr. Riek Machar. South Sudan Foreign Minister Barnaba Morau Benjamin says the government will stop paying the bills because its resources are limited. The development comes as 23 top rebel generals who were expected to arrive in Juba Monday, March 21st, abruptly canceled their trip. Benjamin says the generals canceled their trip because they had problems arranging for their transportation and accommodation.
Absolutely, it is not true. The real problem is they had problems with the promise of Troika and Gemma to arrange for their transport. That is one. Two, the general said they were not clear who was going to pay for their stay here in Juba. They wanted at least Troika or Gemma to tell them clearly who is going to pay for their accommodation. Since they did not get that clear, and those are some of the reasons why they did not come on Monday. It has nothing to do with the government whatsoever.
Mr. Minister, I know that there have been a rebel advance team who have been living in Juba. And is it true that your government has said that by the end of this month that you will stop providing that accommodation?
Yes, they were the people responsible for that accommodation when they were coming in was the Troika. And they were paying for them at the hotel. But the Troika suddenly stopped and said they were no longer going to pay for them. So the government volunteered to pay for them for some time. And now the government has been paying for them for the last 2 months. And that was not an ending thing. That's why the government said that they can no longer continue taking up the responsibility of Troika and General Ku had promised to pay for them. So the government has also limited resources. It cannot be an ending thing.
How many advance team members are we talking about that your government has been paying for? How many people? 10, 15, or what?
About 600 people.
And you have been paying for them living in hotels?
We have been paying for them since the Troika and Gemek stopped paying for their accommodation. The government said, no, we will cancel this because they took up the payment. But there is a limit to that payment. Because the government has no adequate resources for the 1,400 police who are going to be brought in for the joint police. And that's why the 23 generals wanted to make sure who will pay for their accommodation in Zuka, because that's the responsibility of Germans and Troika.
So is it true, Mr. Minister, that your government will cease paying for these advance team members as of the end of this month?
Yes, the government will not continue paying for it. It's unlimited. They took up that as an assistance when Troika stopped paying for them. That's why the government came in suddenly to help. But it is not continuous. It cannot go on for months. We expected the rebel leader to be in by now so that the government is formed. Up to now, we don't have definite date where Dr. Riek Machar, the designated first vice president of the republic, to come in to be sworn in so that the transitional government of national unity is formed. We are hearing that he's traveling across Africa, moving from his country in the state of coming to Juba, so that he is sworn in and the government is formed, so that they can sit as a transitional government and resolve these issues as a government of the day.
Dr. Riek Machar has been kind of concerned about his security. Would that be why he has not come?
I wouldn't be concerned about his security when his advance team are here in Juba for the last 3 months and nothing has happened to them. As for his security, the government has agreed, all right, bring your police and bring your VIP quickly so that they are trained with the rest of the government for his own security. So what is the delay for?
Barnaba Morau Benjamin, South Sudan's foreign minister. He was speaking with me from the capital, Juba. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Daybreak Africa time, 14 minutes past the hour. South Sudan rebels loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar have been given explanation while they abruptly canceled Monday's arrival in Juba of 23 of their top generals. The generals were coming to Juba to prepare the way for the arrival of their leader, Dr. Riek Machar, who is the designated first vice president in a soon-to-be-formed national unity government. Rebel military spokesman Colonel William Gadjia Dang said the trip was canceled after they got word that the governor of Upper Nile State has said he would arrest the generals upon their arrival at Malakal Airport because he had no information from Juba about their coming.
The government put on a serious obstruction on the transportation of 23 generals. The governor of Upper Nile State, Cholson Balo, stated that he should put to jail the 23 generals if they land at Manakal Airport because he has never got notification from the central government. Therefore, we don't know the policy shadowed behind this obstruction. It is very clear that government is not ready to implement the agreement, has always they put conditions on development in all aspects. How could this peace develop if government continue violating the agreement?
Colonel, let me ask you, why are your generals going through Malakal instead of through Juba?
According to the schedule, being met by enemy's flight. The enemy's flight, they come from Juba with helicopters to Malakal. From Malakal, they come to Pagak. Then from Pagak back to Malakal for fueling. Then they go back to Juba. So they don't move from Juba direct to Pagak, according to the mandate of enemies.
Now, you said the governor said that he will arrest the generals because he has no information from the government in Juba. Do you have any official communication from that governor?
Yes, we have a very genuine evidence. Even we have our team now, the IOT humanitarian team, which is supposed to come tomorrow from Juba. They have 3 days now in Malakal. They're supposed to land tomorrow at Pagak. They told the team that so you are not going direct to Pagak, and then so you go back to Juba. And also they told them that when your team comes from Pagak through Malakal, they will put them to jail. This is a very genuine reason, because myself, I was even talking with our management team in Juba. They told me the same story. They have been discussing this afternoon with the JMAC, because to know what is happening and what is the policy behind this obstruction.
So what does that do to the coming to Juba of your leader, Dr. Riek Machar?
This is something very clear that's why I say government is not ready to implement all aspects of peace. Because how should the first vice president could come to Juba if the first team, they don't allow them? Because there should be no obstructions from our side. Because we are going home. We're supposed to welcome our team, knowing that so when these teams arrive in Juba, immediately the chairman will come immediately.
Colonel William Gadjia Deng is the military spokesman for the Sudan People's Liberation Army in opposition. You're speaking with me from the rebel headquarters in Pagat, South Sudan. In Senegal, the French news agency reports that partial results in Sunday's constitutional referendum show that so far a majority of voters favor reforms. However, voter turnout was only at 40%. The reforms backed by the president will limit a president's term to 5 years, down from the current 7. But Senegal's constitutional court recently ruled that the reforms would not affect the current term of President Macky Sall. The opposition had wanted it to take effect immediately. Final official results are expected by this Friday. Journalist Alpha Diallo is in Dakar. Viewers William Eagle asked him about the turnout.
I visited so many polling stations in the outskirts of Dakar, especially in the district of Sikin and Gedjewaye, which is the biggest, has a total of 900,000 registered voters. But then turnout was very low until when the polls were going to be closed at 6 p.m. So a lot of people have just decided to snub the referendum. They have not responded to the call by President Macky Sall constitutional reform.
Now, among the constitutional reforms was a proposal to shorten the president's term from 7 years to 5 years. But I understand the Constitutional Court ruled that illegal. Is that correct?
That is very correct. And this is the reason why a lot of Senegalese decided to abstain. They decided not to go to vote because they thought that President Macky Sall, the reforms will include his fourth mandate. He will reduce his current mandate from 7 to 5. But when the Constitutional Court rejected that, most of them said that there's no need for the referendum. So a lot of Senegalese will tell you that the referendum is a sheer waste of state resources, his current term for 7 years.
Under the current constitution or the new reforms, if they pass for sure, can he run again in 2019? Or is this really his last term?
People believe that he will now run his current term up to 2019. But then according to the reforms that he is proposing or that he has proposed to the Senegalese, after 2019, if he wants to contest another election, it should be a 5-year limit.
if the referendum passes, and I understand the official results will be announced by Friday, the new proposals do offer the opposition greater rights and also rights to the Senegalese diaspora and strengthening the National Assembly. Don't all those proposals actually improve the standing of the opposition?
Yes, we give you more power. And the government, according to the new proposed law, the leader of the opposition will be given more powers by the government. And then the opposition, the government and the opposition, according to the new article, the government will also give the opposition more powers and the leader of the opposition. And then, according to the article, they will be holding from time to time dialogue and then discuss issues of national interest.
That's reporter Alpha Diallo. In Senegal's capital, Dakar, he was speaking with VOA's William Ego. Afrobarometer, the Pan-African Nonpartisan Research Network, says a majority of people surveyed in 36 countries across Africa lack access to clean drinking water and sanitation. The group is scheduled to release its latest survey findings to coincide with World Water Day today, Tuesday. In this interview with reporter Peter Clotty, Brian Howard, Afrobarometer's publications manager, outlined some of the survey's key findings.
Some of the findings were that there has been some slow progress in terms of infrastructure for water and sanitation. Both have increased slightly, but still more than one-third of the surveyed communities have no infrastructure for water, and more than two-thirds have no infrastructure for sewage. Of course, in rural areas, it's far worse than in cities. So that's in terms of infrastructure. Now, in terms of the actual lived experience on the ground, there's been no progress, really. Almost half of the people we talked to, and this is 54,000 people in 36 countries, almost half of them, 45%, went without enough clean water at least once during the year before the survey.
Was the findings or the poll able to find out what alternative measures are there for them to get good, clean drinking water?
Yeah, basically they have to go far. We found, for example, that a majority of people, 51%, have to go outside, not only outside their home, but outside their compound. It varies by country. In Sierra Leone, Uganda, Guinea, Lesotho, Burkina Faso, less than 1 in 20 people have water inside their homes. And in terms of sewage, almost 1 in 10 have no access at all to a latrine or a toilet, not even outside their compound. And 1 in 5 people have to go outside their compound to use a latrine. And this obviously has implications for public health as well as other areas.
Looking at the countries that have done particularly well in the chronological order, what are some of the findings you came with in terms of having access to good drinking water in terms of the population?
The North African countries, across the board, they tend to do better. The countries that do really least well are East African countries. I would mention that water supply is considered a priority by the people we've talked to, by the survey respondents. It's the fifth most important problem across these 36 countries that citizens say their governments need to address. And in some countries, Burkina Faso, Guinea, and Niger, it's the number one problem that people want their governments to address. And a majority, 55% of citizens, say that their governments currently are performing badly in terms of ensuring access to water, clean water, and sanitation.
Brian Howard is Afrobarometer's publications manager. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty. President Barack Obama's historic visit to Cuba on Monday was full of ceremony and symbolism, but the deep divisions between the two nations were also visible. Obama spoke openly about the United States' support for human rights on the island, while Cuban President Raúl Castro strongly denied there are any political prisoners in his country. Alberto Pimienta has more.
President Barack Obama, the guest of honor at the Palace of the Revolution in Havana. At a state dinner, 88 years in the making. After meeting earlier Monday, Presidents Obama and Raul Castro jointly talked to the press, something Castro doesn't do often. While the visit may mark a new phase, the deep divisions between both countries were evident.
I've said consistently, after more than five very difficult decades, the relationship between our governments will not be transformed overnight. We continue, as President Castro indicated, to have some very serious differences, including on democracy and human rights.
Castro once more asked for Guantanamo to be returned to Cuba and for the U.S. embargo to be ended, request not likely to happen with a Republican-controlled Congress.
Mucho más pudiera hacerse.
Much more could be done if the U.S. blockade was lifted. We recognize the position of President Obama and his administration against the blockade and his repeated appeals to Congress to have it removed. The recent measures taken by his government are positive, but are not sufficient.
President Obama says he spoke to Castro about the human rights conditions on the island.
I made it clear that the United States will continue to speak up on behalf of democracy, including the right of the Cuban people to decide their own future. We'll speak out on behalf of universal human rights, including freedom of speech and assembly and religion. Indeed, I look forward to meeting with and hearing from Cuban civil society leaders tomorrow.
According to dissidents on the island, the tensions have increased in the last year. A U.S. journalist asked Castro about political prisoners in Cuba.
Dame la lista ahora mismo de los presos políticos.
Give me a list of the political prisoners, and I will release them immediately. Just mention a list. What political prisoners? Give me a name or the names. Or when the news conference ends, you can give me a list of the prisoners. If we have those political prisoners, before nightfall, they will be released.
Alberto Pimienta for VOA News, Washington.
Time out for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Tuesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with hockey. A series of mismatches continued at the Africa Junior Hockey Championships in Windhoek, Namibia on Monday. In the men's contest, Namibia overpowered Tanzania 23-0 as South Africa dismissed Zimbabwe 11-0. In the women's fixtures, South Africa outclassed Tanzania 33-0 as Zimbabwe overwhelmed Botswana 35-0. Turning to athletics, Sami Kitwara clocked 59 minutes and 47 seconds to lead Kenneth Kipkemboi, Paul Lonyangata, Emmanuel Kipsang and Leonard Komon in a top-five Kenyan dominance at the Lisbon Half Marathon in the Portuguese capital Lisbon on Sunday. Meanwhile, Ruti Aga completed the course in 1 hour, 9 minutes and 16 seconds to lead Wuda Ayeleo in an Ethiopian 1-2 triumph in the women's race. Kenyan Lynette Masai claimed the bronze medal. Moving on to football, hosts Egypt dismissed Libya 4-0 in the return leg of the Africa Women's Cup of Nations qualifier in Alexandria. Egypt progressed to the second round of the qualifiers courtesy of a 12-0 advantage. Elsewhere, Mozambique edged their Angolan hosts 3-2 in a beach soccer friendly played in Luanda over the weekend. In Morocco, Egypt play Morocco in a friendly futsal encounter in Casablanca today, Tuesday. Both teams are gearing up for the Africa Futsal Championships due in Johannesburg, South Africa next month. Meanwhile, Sierra Leone hosts Malawi in a friendly in the capital Freetown today, Tuesday. This will be the first international match played in Sierra Leone since the end of the Ebola crisis, which started 2 years ago. During the crisis, football was suspended in the country as a measure to curb the spread of the deadly Ebola virus. Finally, in tennis, the inaugural Gasigwa Memorial Tennis Tournament starts in Kigali, Rwanda today, Tuesday. Rwanda Tennis Federation Secretary General Valens Habimana told the Kigali media that the event is in memory of the late Jean-Claude Gasigwa, then Rwanda's top tennis player, who collapsed during a morning training session in Kigali last year. The late Gasigwa was also among East Africa's top tennis players. The week-long contest has attracted over 120 professional and amateur players from Burundi, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Kenya, Tanzania, Uganda, and hosts Rwanda. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And that's it for this Tuesday, March 22nd edition of Daybreak Africa. I'm James Butter in Washington, hoping that you will have a very good day.
Tuesday on Health Chat, host Lenore Modou sheds the light on new technologies and innovation in strengthening the health system. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the International Code for the United States.